Welcome to the Monday Night Sports Show on the VOCM Bigland FM radio network. The views and opinions expressed on this show are not necessarily those of this station. Now here's the host of the Monday Night Sports Show, Ben Murphy.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome and thank you for joining me on the Monday Night Sports Show on your 590 VOCM and Labrador's Bigland FM. I'm your host, Ben Murphy, and we have Mr. Zach Snow back behind the glass producing the show tonight. Zach, my man, how are you?
I'm doing good, Ben, doing good. Another great night of sports chat ahead, and pretty much one of the big news stories to come out of NL Sports is that the Newfoundland Growlers are in the Kelly Cup Finals.
Yep, you've got that right. And with that, we're actually going to swing it over to Mr. Glenn Stanford very shortly. But as they are each and every week here on the Monday Night Sports Show, the phone lines are open. We're taking calls for the next 2 hours. And all you have to do is call Zach at 273-5211 or 1-888-590. VOCM, that's 1-888-590-8626, and we'll get you on the air to talk about anything in the world of sports that you would like. So again, phone lines will be open for each and any one of you to call 273-5211 or 1-888-590-VOCM. If you have any questions, anything you want to chat about, you can also tweet at me, at Ben Murphy VOCM, and you can join in on the conversation. The VOCM Monday Night Sports Show is brought to you by Maverick Sports and Collectibles, located at 250 Water Street. They've got everything for the sports fan. Mavericks is your local expert when it comes to sports apparel and memorabilia. They carry NHL, NBA, MLB, NFL, and soccer. They've got everything. They've got sports cards, signed pictures and memorabilia, t-shirts, hats, hoodies, jackets, jerseys, sports figurines. They've got it all. Maverick carries products also for you to support your St. John's Edge and Newfoundland Growlers. So with that, I am happy to welcome my next guest on the program over on line number one of your Newfoundland Growlers, who are off to the Kelly Cup Finals in their inaugural season. Not a big deal. Mr. Glenn Stanford, welcome and thank you for joining me on the Monday Night Sports Show.
Thank you, gentlemen, for having me on.
We are happy to have you. So let's get right to business. As just mentioned, they did it, and in fine fashion, I mean a 4-1 series win, and now have a berth in the Kelly Cup Finals. So just first off, Glenn, just what has this ride been like for you guys up to this point? Because it's just been wild.
Yeah, it has been wild, and it's, you know, anytime you you come into the league as a new franchise. I mean, obviously, we all, every team in the league at the beginning of October thinks they have a chance to, you know, to make it to the finals. But, you know, only two actually do make it to the finals. And it's been a wonderful, absolutely wonderful year for us. I mean, we couldn't have, both myself and Dean McDonald couldn't be happy with the way the team has competed all year and how they played, you know, obviously both home and on the road and during these playoffs. And, you know, any time that you're in any league, and, you know, I've been fortunate enough to be around hockey for 30 years, and you don't make it this far very often. You know, I've made it to the, final, you know, three or four times, won a Calder Cup in Hamilton, and I made it to the final two or three other times in the American Hockey League. And so you really have to embrace it. You really have to enjoy it. And hats off to, you know, to John Snowden, our coaching staff, and certainly our players for getting us this far and allowing all of us to enjoy the ride, for sure.
Yeah, and I mean, you obviously follow the team very closely, both here and on the road. What has impressed you the most about this team all season?
I think it's, you know, not to copy what Kyle Dubas has said, but I think it's what we have done all year is just play our game, our consistent game. And, you know, we are one of the youngest teams in the league. And when we play, you know, the Floridas and the Orlandos and the Jacksonvilles and in that division, they are a little bit older, or they're a little bit grittier, or they're a little bit tougher. And, you know, the temptation is there to try to play that style, you know, and that's not how our team was built. Our team was built more on speed up front and obviously, you know, strong defense and good goaltending. And what's impressed me is the way that that John has stayed the path. And we didn't veer, you know, maybe in one of the Brampton games when we lost 8-2, we retaliated a little bit and in the early going of that game and got ourselves into penalty trouble. And, you know, other than that game, I think we stayed the course and played the style that, you know, that Toronto wanted us to play and the style that we were built for. And sometimes that's tough to do when you're not winning and you're losing some games, but, yeah, now we've been the same. We've been the same type of team really since Chloe took it over in October, and hats off to him as well for what he did for us and getting us started. But that's probably what impressed me the most, is just that we just stayed the course and then we just played our game.
Yeah, absolutely. And now attendance at home has definitely spiked in the last little while. Saturday night, the Mile 1 was absolutely rocking, which is great to see.
Yeah, it is great to see. And what will even be better to see is, having two absolutely sold-out games this Saturday and Sunday. Mm-hmm. I mean, we have an opportunity here. The ECHL final will be broadcast on NHL Network and broadcast throughout the states and stuff. So there's an opportunity for us to showcase our hometown against two teams that draw pretty well in the West. I know the game tonight is in Toledo. Toledo is one of the premier teams in our league with regards to how they operate. They're averaging 6,000 to 7,000. Throughout the year, their building is going to be sold out if it's Toledo. Tulsa is in the same boat further west in Oklahoma. So it's an opportunity for us here in St. John's, as we have done with the St. John's Maple Leafs and as we have done with the St. John's Ice Caps, is to really sell this building out this weekend. And it's we need that type of support here as you go throughout the playoffs. And we saw it during the three games that we had here with Florida. As you mentioned, Ben, there was three good crowds, to be quite frank with you.
Yeah.
On Wednesday night, it was great as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
But it's an opportunity for us to showcase who we are, to be proud Newfoundlanders. And as I said, this is going to be broadcast around. So we really need the support this Saturday and Sunday from our hometown, and then certainly our players would certainly appreciate it as well.
Yeah, that's actually great. I didn't realize it was being broadcast on the NHL Network. That's fantastic.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's... I'm saying that probably before it's been announced, but I know that in previous years, so I'm going by that mm-hmm. both the Kelly Cup finals and the AHL finals were broadcast. So awesome. I'm making that assumption that's going to happen.
Yeah, and as you just mentioned, Game 1 and 2 of the Kelly Cup Finals kick off the Mile 1 this coming Saturday and Sunday. It is still up in the air as to which team they'll face between Toledo and Tulsa. Kind of looking like Toledo right now, but won't get ahead of ourselves by any means. But what can we expect?
Well, we had you're right. Toledo and Tulsa tee off here about in another hour and a half, 2 hours time. So that's in Toledo tonight. They're up 3-2.
Mm-hmm.
They've been playing pretty strong hockey all year. They knocked off the number one team in the league in Cincinnati, who we knocked off the number two team in the league. So we don't play those teams. They're obviously out in the Western Conference, and we did the only team we played in the Western Conference this year was Fort Wayne. And really don't know what to expect, except as we chatted after the game Saturday night and with the same question, what can, it's not so much what they can expect as what they can expect from us. And, we're going to go in to play the type of hockey that got us through the first three rounds, the consistent type of hockey, the speed up front. And obviously with Gartag and that, we've been blessed with great goalkeeping.
Yeah.
And you don't get this far. You really don't get this far, Ben, on either side. We're expecting those guys to be tough. When you make it to the final of any league, no matter what league it is, the remaining two teams are going to be tough. It's not going
100%.
To be an easy series. But we're confident in the style of hockey that we played, that we discussed a little bit earlier. So, hopefully that's successful for us. And we'll see tonight, if not tonight, and then Wednesday, who we're playing this weekend.
All right, so Mr. Stanford, we do want to play a little something for you here. So, Zach, you good to take it away?
The face-off inside the Growler zone. One back by the Everblades and back to the right-hand point. There's a shot wide of the cage, Jardine. Bouncing puck there, comes all the way out into the slot. Stick checked on the play was Cox. It rolls out into neutral ice. Rowe has to put it back in. 15 seconds on the clock. To Branson, finds Jardine. Back behind the net again, and ahead Elenuk. Elenuk's tied up along the boards. 5 seconds to go. Stand proud, Newfoundland and Labrador. Your Newfoundland Growlers are Eastern Conference champions. They're going to the Kelly Cup final. An unbelievable team effort again here tonight. Eastern Conference champions.
Well, if that doesn't give you a tingle up your spine, for both Chris and, and Brian Rogers, the way they call those games, and I'm sure, as you mentioned, you've heard probably the year, you don't know whether Chris is calling the games or whether Brian is calling the games. Both of them sound alike. But, yeah, it's a great moment. I mean, I've been fortunate enough to be around the game for 30 years, and as I said, you know, won a Calder Cup and, you know, lost in the finals mm-hmm. 2-3 times. And it's a special time of the year, you know, when you reach this. And I said to Dean McDonald the other night, when he, you know, when we were talking about going to the final, and he said, well, you know, what advice do you have? And I said, you know something? You got to enjoy it. You know, you really got to enjoy it because you don't get here all the time. And that's what I would say to our staff. That's what I would say to our players. And that's what I would say to our fans is that, you know, it's tough. Whatever league you're in, it's tough to make it to the final. And when you make it to the final as a group, as a city, as a province, we need to embrace it because it only happens now and then. Let's embrace it. Let's have some fun. Let's support our players, and let's hopefully bring the first professional championship to St. John's.
Yes, absolutely. And now, like, I know you said earlier that at game one of the season, everyone thinks they can win, but, you know, 12 or even 8 months ago, did you ever think the team would be in this position in its inaugural season?
No, absolutely not. I mean, you're more worried about making sure you have a brand, you have a team name, mm-hmm. you have merchandise, you have sponsorships. You know, you're kind of just doing the regular day-to-day business of getting an organization up and running, and you know, just happy enough to get it up and running. So, yeah, no, there's no way. Last May, I would have thought I'd be sitting here a year May playing in the Kelly Cup final. So, I think then that's the reason why I think you just got to. Everybody needs to enjoy this, yeah. And then hopefully it all comes with a happy ending at the end of it for all of us.
Yeah, 100%. And how important has it been to have all the local guys been playing the way they have all year? I mean, like Zach O'Brien has just been absolutely outstanding. Adam Pardy speaks for himself, and then James Malindi wearing the C. Like, how important has that been to the franchise?
It's been incredibly important. You know, I'm with Marcus Power as well, and it's
yes,
been,
yeah.
You know, and one of the things that when we talked about with Kyle Dubas and with Toronto when we put our team together was that he asked me how important it was to have some local presence. And I said to him that it was important for us, you know, for both myself and Dean, that we did have local presence. But we didn't want to have local presence for the sake of having local presence. You know, these guys
yes,
had to make a contribution. And boy, did they ever make a contribution. It's, you know, again, never would have dreamed of, you know, when we signed those four guys, you know, to represent, you know, our city and our province and our team in the first year, that we would get the input from all four of them. All four of them had just been absolutely wonderful on and off the ice, wonderful ambassadors for our city. And, we're so lucky to have those four. And when we talked about, you know, they needed to make a contribution, boy, did they ever make a contribution. Yeah. And it's been absolutely wonderful to watch.
And Glenn, the last thing I wanted to ask you about is just with Kyle Dubas and the Leafs coming here in September. That's going to be a pretty great event. I mean, the full camp coming here, it's pretty exciting stuff. What kind of stuff can fans expect there?
Well, I don't think they realize what they're getting.
Yeah.
I just spent 2 hours this afternoon here in St. John's dealing with Reed Mitchell from the Toronto Maple Leafs going over that camp. And you know, they're coming in with 80 players, you know, 50 staff, two chartered plane loads of people to get them in. The alumni are coming in to play in the alumni game. They're bringing all of their A alumni people.
Oh, wow.
They arrive here on a Thursday. They practice Friday morning and afternoon, Saturday morning, afternoon, Sunday morning, afternoon, on ice, open to the public, free, open to the public. We end with the NHL exhibition game on Tuesday night against Ottawa. There's public appearances, there's picnics, there's barbecues, there's,
wow.
it's an unbelievable week, that they have, put together for us and at very, very large expense. I mean, you
yeah.
just got to think about taking 150 people from Toronto with all of their equipment and shipping it out here to St. John's for a week. It's an enormous
yeah.
expense, and it's going to be an absolutely wonderful week. The benefits for the city, the hotels will be packed. You know, the restaurants and the bars going for those 4 or 5 days. I just don't think people realize the impact
yeah, absolutely.
Of what it's going to mean to our city once they come in September. So more to come on that in the near future. But yeah, it's an absolutely wonderful time for that to happen.
Yeah, unreal. That is so exciting. Well, Glenn, thank you so much for taking the time to join me on the program tonight. I really appreciate it.
Okay, go Growlers.
Go Growlers. Thank you so much. Have a wonderful night.
Okay, bye.
Bye. That is Glenn Stanford, co-owner of your Newfoundland Growlers, on the line there, and what a great chat indeed. But we're going to take a quick timeout, and then we'll be right back on your, the Monday Night Sports Show on your 590 VOCM. There you go. Now I got it, Zach. I'm a little behind tonight. There you go. We'll be right back.
Call now 273-5211 or 1-888-590-8626. That's 1-888-590-VOCM. The Monday Night Sports Show will be right back. This is the Monday Night Sports Show on the VOCM Big Land Radio Network.
The Monday Night Sports Show is brought to you by Maverick Sports and Collectibles, 250 Water Street. Everything for the sports fan.
Welcome back to the program, everybody. I'm your host, Ben Murphy, and now we're going to take it over to something that I had the absolute honor of doing last Wednesday. Pretty cool for myself, not going to lie, as a Leafs fan, as many of you know. Kyle Dubas was in town to check out the Growlers, as myself and Glenn just chatted about quite a bit there. And we had a chance to speak to him as the media, so we got a little media scrum in there with Kyle Dubas on Wednesday morning. Ahead of the Growlers game, which was super, super cool, and he was a super nice guy. So we're actually going to play that tape for you there now. So, Zach, take it away.
I think this is with our Leafs unfortunately being done and a bit of a break in the Marley schedule. It just provided a great opportunity for me to come. It's something that I'd wanted to do during the season, and especially being our first season in this endeavor. And be able to, you know, support the group here and check in on the group and what's happening and so it's I'm very happy obviously with the success of the team for sure and not only on the ice but with our development of our prospects that we have here. So this allows me to see it firsthand, especially great that it's in the conference final as well. So excited about that.
I was just going to ask, obviously a season up first. So how's it going? How do you think it's going?
Well, I think that if you played it out that the team would be in the conference final and we would have as many contributors up and down our lineup with the Leafs and Marlies from the Growlers, combined with the success of the club on the ice and in the conference final up 2-0 right now, I don't know that you could have imagined it would play out any better. The communication, the relationship from Glenn, Trevor, John, all the way down and across all branches of our organization, public relations, equipment, medical, it's been spectacular. It's really been a great relationship for us, and we're very, very excited about it. It's gone great.
Attendance has also, I know that it's been a hot topic here.
Sure.
And the Ice Caps were here, sold out stadium. Yep. Obviously, it's tapered off. How do you feel about the ticket sales?
Well, I think that one of the things that will change over time is I think the fans in the area and in the whole metro area and in the community will see how we want to use this program to really start our players off in pro hockey, and rather than just put them with the Marlies right away, we want our players to start off here in St. John's. So I think as they see that relationship grow and they see our commitment to the program here and they become more familiar with the league and the quality of play, I think it's only going to help. I'm certain that it'll get back to being sold out every single game. I do think that the group here has done a great job considering that they didn't necessarily have a whole lot of time before the season started, where once everything was locked in and ready to roll. And obviously next year with us coming here for training camp and playing an exhibition game here, and being here for a full week in September, I think that'll give a much better run-up to the season and help the crew here with the Growlers.
I know that travel has been an issue for teams previously.
Sure.
How
is
that going?
We've experienced no issues at all in terms of getting players up and down between the Marlies and the Growlers, even the Leafs and the Growlers in Eamon McAdam's case. I know that there's always challenges during the winter anywhere in Canada, and I think the group here has handled it about as well as they possibly can. Talking to John Snowden and talking to the group throughout the season, they handle it as expected. They know that weather's going to be a problem. As for the other teams in the league, I haven't heard anything negative whatsoever. I think everyone expects traveling in the northern United States and Canada during the winter months. You're always going to run into snow and weather, but they handle it well here. It never seems to bother them or faze them. They just go and play the games, and they've won a lot more than they've lost, so it's all good.
Why come to St. John's for training camp?
Well, I think the in coming here with the Marlies in the first three seasons that I was with the Leafs, you saw how important the Maple Leafs were to the community and the support that the Marlies would get when they were here in the community. And we're one of our major things we tried to do with our training camp. We had it in Halifax for two seasons. Then we had it in Niagara Falls in the Niagara area for two seasons. And I don't know that there's any place in Canada that you go aside from Toronto where the Maple Leafs are as important and there's as much passion for them as there is in the St. John's area. So for us, that's really the reason for it. I think it's a very meaningful thing for us. You see the impact that we can make in the community, and we've made in Halifax and Niagara, and I think for us it's even more exciting to do it in St. John's because of the reception we know we're going to have. We're staying here longer than we stayed in those other two communities, and we're coming in on the Thursday. We're not leaving till the next Wednesday and playing an exhibition game here. So I just think it's a unique opportunity for our staff and our players to connect with very passionate fans in a different part of the area of the country other than Toronto. So we're very excited about it.
You followed this Growlers team along pretty closely throughout the playoffs, even when the Leafs were still in the playoffs as well. What's impressed you most about this team all year?
Oh, I think the two things. Number one, I think the job that the whole staff has done to ready the players night in and night out. And I think, especially in this league, the contributions and the way that the coaching staff has developed the players to a point where they're a much different group than a lot of other teams in the league. They're very young. And the way that they've been able to set them up for success in playoff hockey in a much older league. And I think the thing that's impressed me most about John and the players at large is the fact that they play their style. They don't get away from it. They've kind of hammered home the organizational ethos that we want in terms of our playing style. And when it would have been easy to go away from it or when different series were going different ways to put different players in and try to play a different way, they've stuck with it and they've been rewarded. So it's been great for us to see, and we've been so excited to watch it as it's gone along.
And speaking of Coach Snowden, after taking over in the transition from head coach Ryan Clough, a bit of adversity there, what were your thoughts on that whole transition and how he handled it?
I think the results speak for themselves. He's been the positive thing with John, and why we thought it was great to have him here, is that he's been involved in our organization. He was in Orlando for the previous two seasons, and thank goodness we brought him in, given the circumstances with Ryan, that he was able just to come in right away and slide right into that spot without any real issues or any challenges. It's been fun to watch, and fun to watch him grow into that role. He obviously knows the league very well, and he's just done a remarkable job. His personality, his communication with the players, his communication back to us, how open he is to ideas, it's been remarkable. So we're lucky to have John.
And then I was actually chatting with Ryan Clough just a little bit earlier when I first rocked into the rink. Do you guys still have a whole lot of contact as well?
Yeah, I was just talking to Ryan as well. I'll sit with him tonight at the game. We care a lot about Ryan, and he's still a big member of our organization and will be as long as he wants. His health comes first, and that's the most important thing for us. But he's a great person to have around. He's very supportive of John and the staff, and we're happy to have Ryan for sure.
The players in the Growlers locker room who want to make their way up the organizational
A lot of them already have. I mean, and I think that the key thing now is why this run is so important is if you look at the Leafs and Marlies and last year's Marlies run where the Marlies won the Calder Cup, you've got eight or nine players from that team that have now gone on to the Leafs, or they've gone on to other NHL teams and they're full-time NHL players, and the same thing applies here. You know, they're six wins away from the Kelly Cup, which would be in an inaugural season would be quite a feat, especially with the composition of the team being so young. And so for us, I think if you win together as a group here, it only helps you moving forward and helps leave your stamp on the community and with the organization, and it only serves to benefit you as you move ahead. So we're looking for a lot of these guys. Next year we'll have holes with the Marlies as we plan it out, and we're hopeful that they graduate up to the Marlies and we'll fill in here and have a new crop of guys to develop.
So that's Kyle Dubas, general manager of the Toronto Maple Leafs, parent organization of the Newfoundland Growlers, of course. So he was here in town watching the Growlers there, and that chat was on Wednesday. But it was just super cool to be able to chat with Kyle and be there. And he was just great. As you just heard, he was fantastic. So a big thank you to Leafs organization as a whole for that one, and our Growlers, of course. But we'll take a quick timeout, and then when we come back, we have Mr. Sam Prowse waiting on line number 5 in the queue. We'll be right back right after this.
Call now, 273-5211, or 1-888-590-8626. That's 1-888-590-VOCM. The Monday Night Sports Show will be right back. This is the Monday Night Sports Show on the VOCM Big Land Radio Network.
All right, welcome back to the program, everybody. I'm going to go over to line number 5 right now, where we have the basketball insider, Mr. Sam Prowse. Sam, how are you?
I'm good, Ben. Good to be on again, man. Love talking sports with you.
Yeah, fantastic to have you. Big weekend for you. Gone away, nice wedding.
Yeah, I had a great time, man. Great time, but it's always good to get home and get back on track, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. All right, so we might as well dive right in after last night's big game. Holy cow. 118-112 for the Raps. What were your thoughts in OT?
Well,
Two OT, I should say.
Yeah, it was double OT. It was an intense game. Obviously, every game besides game 2, which was dreadful, has been intense for the playoffs.
Yeah, we'll get back to game two.
Yeah, that was bad. But yeah, last night was great. The Raptors really needed to win. I mean, like, if we had lost last night, you might as well kiss the season goodbye. Come back from 3 hours really tough. But especially being in Toronto, the arena was packed. We just needed to win. Like, the 2 overtimes, the cost, are we going to win? Are we going to do it?
I know.
But you know what? We paid for it, I guess. I mean, Kawhi Leonard played 52 minutes, which is a lot of playing time. But such a big win. Just so big. We're on again tomorrow. And, I mean, I feel, a sense of confidence now. After game 2, it was hard to feel any kind of hope at all. But I think the confidence is back. And hopefully we get enough rest. I know it's not too much, but a day's rest of tomorrow comes out really sharp.
Of course, he's just an absolute monster. But what did you think of Kawhi's game all in all?
Yeah, I mean, you got to give the guy credit. He's not a very, social guy.
No, God.
Social media. His interviews are not exactly, crazy or whoa. He doesn't say anything special. He just, talks. He's very, very to himself. But, my God, can he play basketball? On defense, he creates so much steals. He's always in good position. His hands are always active. He blocks shots. And then on offense, he's so smart with the ball. He doesn't get very many turnovers. Takes really high-quality shots. And he's really strong. He gets to the net with, no trouble at all. I mean, you got to put him up there with the best players in the league right now. I'm talking about, the best overall players. I mean, of course, Steph Curry and Damian Lillard and Kyrie Irving are skilled players. But when you want to talk about, an all-around, almost perfect basketball player in today's game, I can't mention LeBron and Giannis and Durant without mentioning Kawhi Leonard. I mean, Kawhi is definitely top 3, top 2, even if you really want to, play for that one. But the guy is a tremendous athlete.
Yeah, and, he's carried this team, obviously, this far. But do you think Kawhi just by himself like that? Because, it kind of is just his show, and it's kind of his game to win each night, by the way things have gone so far. So do you think that's enough to get the Raps past the Bucks? Because we know the Bucks are a great team as well. But because we've seen it in basketball in the past that one guy can be enough, as we've seen with LeBron. So is it enough with Kawhi, do you think?
No, it's not enough. And honestly, that's been an issue in these playoffs that a lot of reporters have talked about. The Raptors can't expect, to win a championship or even get to the finals if they're putting too much reliance on Kawhi. Mm-hmm. I know the Bucks kind of do it, with Giannis, but they still have some strong players around them. And, we do too. We do. I mean, we have Gasol, we have Siakam, we have Larry, and it showed last night when those guys stepped up. Gasol had a double-double. Siakam had a double-double. Norman Powell had a great game. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's so important for us to win a championship. We cannot be all about Kawhi. We got to be a well-rounded team, and we have that team. I mean, our starting lineup is a really strong unit. There's no reason why everyone can't be chipping in. We can't put all this pressure on Kawhi. All the pressure, whatever, the guy produces. But still, in order to win a championship, in order to get past these tough Bucks, we really need everyone chipping in. We can't just be all Kawhi. It's not going to work in the long run.
In your eyes, what makes the Bucks so good all around? Giannis is a freak, and we'll get to that in a second, too.
But they're just, I like watching them play. They're a fun team to watch. They're not, exciting and electric like the Warriors or you know, any team LeBron's on. But like in terms of basketball, they got you know, obviously Giannis, who's an athletic freak, 6'11", like, can do everything. But like, around him, they have guys who are like good scorers, good 3-point shooters. And one thing I thought was, you know, something you could not notice was how tall they are. Like, they have a really tall lineup. And in today's game, everyone's going with a more shorter lineup, more quick. But like their team, they have like Eric Bledsoe, the starting point guard. He's 6'2", so he's not very tall. But then you got Chris Middleton, who's like 6'7". Nikola Mirotic, who's 6'10". Then you got Giannis, 6'11". And then Brook Lopez, 7 foot. Like, my lord, their guys are tall. And they can shoot. So, they kind of pose a different threat to the Raptors matchup-wise, where they're all taller guys, but they can all stretch the floor. It's an interesting matchup for the Raptors to be facing, but I must say they're fun to watch, and they're going to be really, really, really tough to beat.
Yeah, and now, plain and simple, how about Giannis? Just how good is he?
He's really good. I got to say, sure, I'm Canadian, I got the bias. I pick Kawhi, but mainly because I pick Kawhi is he's already won Defensive Player of the Year. He's already been in Finals MVP. Yeah. He beat LeBron. He guarded LeBron. Like, Giannis is obviously a great shot blocker. He's super strong, super athletic, super fast. But I mean, he's not a really good shooter. He had airballed a free throw last night. He's not a great 3-point shooter. Kawhi is money at both those.
Mm-hmm.
Kawhi nails down threes. He nails free throws. I mean, like, defensively, like, you know, as a perimeter defender, he's probably the best in the league. But yeah, Giannis is special, and I think he does deserve MVP this year. I know a lot of people say, oh, James Harden. But, I mean, like, Giannis, you know, made the Milwaukee Bucks. I mean, I'm sure there's sports lovers in Newfoundland who have no idea who the Milwaukee Bucks even are. Like, Giannis made them the best team in the NBA. Like, no one saw that coming.
Yeah, okay. Fair point.
I think he deserves the MVP. I mean, he's been astounding in the playoffs, regular season. The guy is as special as they say. I mean, like, it's crazy because no one saw this coming. Like, when he was drafted, there was barely any tapes on him. He was drafted at like 14 or 15. He wasn't even like top 10. And he put on like 50 pounds of muscle since being in the NBA. Like, the guy is just a freak athlete. He's fun to watch play too.
Yeah, absolutely. Just the way he does this thing with such dominance. Because like you said, like, so strong. And you really see that come out. And I just found it unreal.
Yeah, and he just jumps from like the free throw line. He can slam it over everybody. And he's under the net. Like, he's going to dunk it. There's no one getting in his way. It's fun. I'm like, it's cool that he's a European guy too, you know, like,
yeah.
Typically it's always American guys. Like, it's cool to see a European, like, you know, a Greek player be like, you know, the league's best all-around guy right now, or arguably so.
And, how about those two Siakam free throw misses?
Oh, that's crazy too. He was having, you know, he had a great game.
Yeah.
I think he had like 25 and 11, or he had double-double at least. Those free throws, wow. The pressure. I mean, like, he's a young guy.
I know.
And, you know, I think it's important that we all consider this. Like, he's a young guy. He only became a starter this year. Like, he was always like a bench guy. Like, he wasn't even really a playoff guy last year. Like, he really, you know, blossomed into quit the player. But those free throws, yeah, that was I felt bad for the guy. I mean, like, obviously a lot of pressure, but, like, you know, you're shooting at home. Those ones should, I mean, at least one should have gone down, right? I mean, if you're playing on the road and you're a young guy, I kind of understand that, but you would have kind of expected or anticipated at least that one of those would have gone down. So I was disappointed. Mm-hmm. Thank God we won the game.
Yeah,
so, I mean,
absolutely.
It is what it is now, right?
And now, how critical is this game, or game four, tomorrow night?
It's big. And, like, you know, a lot of these playoff games, they've had a lot of days rest in between. But, you know, it's only one, you know, they played last night, day after day, and they're back at it again tomorrow. So it's not an easy task. I mean, obviously, like, you know, it's hard playing against the Bucks, playoffs, yada, yada, yada. But, like, with limited rest, especially after playing two overtimes, it's going to be a little more tougher than what we had initially anticipated. But we got to win. We got to win. Because if we're going back to Milwaukee, it's going to be harder to win. So if we can get two at home, we're looking sharp. And then anything can happen. You know, and, you know, once you get two game win, if we win two in a row, even though we're on the road, maybe that momentum shifts over and we can steal one on the road.
Yeah.
Then who knows what will happen. But I think it's critical. I mean, every game of the playoffs,
yeah,
is critical.
Really
every
though.
Game of the Raptors is critical because, like, you know, we're all just on the edge of our seat hoping that, like, it's not a repeat of past history, you know, past seasons, right? We want to see them finally break it and go to the finals. So, like, it's just stressful, you know? Like, me and my friends, my old man, we're just too stressed out watching all these games. Cannot watch them, right?
All right, Sam. Well, we'll take a quick timeout. Yeah, we'll take a quick timeout. And then we'll continue this conversation right after this.
Call now 273-5211 or 1-888-590-8626. That's 1-888-590-VOCM. The Monday Night Sports Show will be right back. This is the Monday Night Sports Show on the VOCM Big Land Radio Network.
The Monday Night Sports Show is brought to you by Maverick Sports and Collectibles, 250 Water Street. Everything for the sports fan.
All right, welcome back to the Monday Night Sports Show. We're on line number 5 with Sam Prowse, my basketball insider. But Sam, let's continue this conversation. So let's turn the page now over to our local St. John's Edge. Unfortunate result. They ended up getting swept in the finals, but, you know, just absolutely injury-riddled. And they're not going to make any excuses for themselves, as you know, but just a heartbreaking loss.
It was tough. I mean, it was tough. But like you said, like they were riddled with injuries. Like, Carl couldn't play the last game.
Yeah.
I mean, I know Des Lee was beat up really bad. I mean, like, Davis missed a game. That was suspension, I believe. But still, I mean, like, you know, his absence was felt. Our boys were beat up. They were really beat up. And Moncton had the best team all year. They're the best team in the league. You got to, you know, take your hat off to them. Give them the credit. They made it, you know, they only won and was in game 7 the last like few seconds against Halifax to get to the finals. And then they just took care of business. They really beat up our guys good. It was sad, you know, because after it was a great season from the Edge, like, you know, like one of the most popular sports teams that ever played here in Newfoundland. It would have been really cool to see them win a championship. And especially with the Growlers going so far. Imagine having 2 championships in 1 season. That'd be so cool.
I know.
Hopefully the Growlers can do it. But for the Edge, I mean, like, it sucked to see. But, I mean, it keeps us hopeful for next season. Hopefully we can sign some other big players and, like, you know, make another big push. Because 2 years in a row now, we've had, like, one of the best teams in the league. So, but, you know, the expectation is already there next season for us to be another playoff team and a championship contender, right?
Yeah, absolutely. That's kind of where the bar is set now, especially for the fans. That's kind of just the way they look at it, that this team is going to be good and it's expected to be good now because, like you said, they have put on such a good show for the last 2 years. There's so much turnover in this league, so many one-year contracts, so it's kind of hard to say what the outlook for this team does look like next year, but do you think that they'll have a lot easier of a time kind of retaining guys and reeling in other big fish because of, you know, how great the fan base and everything is here?
Good question. You know, it's hard to say because, like I said, the turnover in this league is really bad. I mean, like, we had 3 returning players from last season's team. Like, it's like who'd say who we have back next year?
Mm-hmm.
And the thing is, like, being, you know, like Newfoundlanders, like we buy into our sports team. Like, everyone bought into our unit. Everyone was so, like, you fall in love with the players.
Yeah.
You know, those are the guys that represent our city. So, God, who's come back next year? It's really hard to say. I mean, Glenn Davis, that's really up in the air.
Yeah.
Carl, obviously, 38. It's really up in the air. But like you said, like, even though we're, you know, there's a high chance that we could lose the, you know, those big name guys. But since we've already kind of, you know, made ourselves known, not only by basketball players, but by basketball fans, who knows who will come our way? You know, we get like 4,000 fans a game. We've had Glenn Davis, Carl. We've had, like, good players. So, you know what? Even, like, anyone that's known that'll bring some attention, some excitement to the team, I think we can grab somebody. I'd love to know. I mean, I'm always curious. I'd love to know who they're actually going for and what they got in mind and what they can pull off. But after getting Glenn Davis and Carl on the same team, why can't they get another big player, even if one of those two don't come back? Like, there's no reason why we can't find another, like, star-caliber player to get some fans in, you know, in seats and to get the excitement back again, right?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think, you know, they might have a little bit of, maybe not necessarily an easier time drawing guys in, but I definitely think it helps and plays a big role. And to see, you know, Big Baby come here and really just kind of, like, embrace a city, embrace everything the way he did, you know, just the fans, mostly, because, like, at those games, it's just wild.
And that's the thing, too. Like, I mean, like, there's no way Glenn Davis did not have a good experience playing here. Like it just seemed like he was loving his life, right? And, like, that's all you need. You need one good, you know, one, like, really, like, well-known player like that, give a, you know, a really positive response to playing here and, like, you know, really give our city a good review. And, you know, that'll attract more players. You know, when he's talking and when he's training in the summertime, they're like, yeah, boys, you know what? Like, St. John's is a good city to play basketball in. Good fan base. They'll welcome you. It's a good level of sport. So, yeah, I mean, that could help big time for us. And, of course, with Carl, I mean, Carl's played also, like, you know, Team Canada and away, like, he can attract some big names as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, like, I'm really, one thing too, a lot of, like, Newfoundland fans might not be aware, but, like, Junior Cadogan was a big name coming in. Like, he played Team Canada. He played for Marquette. Like, that's a pretty big name. Like,
yeah.
I think we can really draw some more bigger names. Like, the fans love it. I mean, they just eat it up. So I'm really hoping we get at least one big, like, known sign for next year.
But next, I just wanted, like, because it is really up in the air. Carl obviously probably hasn't even thought about it yet at this point. But what do you think, just, like, personally, are the chances that he does come back and play again next year?
I mean, to be honest, I mean, like, if I'm looking back at, like, the history of basketball, usually guys are finishing up their careers at 38, 39 years old.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't fully anticipate him to be playing next year. I could see him being, like, a coach. That would be really cool.
Yes.
I mean, he's still going to be involved with the team. I'm sure about that.
Guaranteed.
He's just too big of a basketball guy. Like, he's the face of Newfoundland basketball. I think, like, he'll definitely be part of the team. I think it'd be so cool if he was coach or, like, you know, even, like, assistant coach or, like, I'm sure he'll be the manager. As much as I'd love to see him play again, because, you know, he showed signs of his old self this season. I mean, like, he'll be 39, so it's going to be tough. It's really hard to see him play. I mean, I'm like, you know, he's one of my idols growing up, and I love watching him play. I mean, it would mean everything to see him again, but I do understand, you know, he's a family man. He's 39 years old. I'm sure he's going to want to, like, you know, it's almost time to step away from the game, playing-wise at least.
Yeah, and, you know, but, like, last summer even, he did take on that GM role, the interim GM for, like, over the summer, and he did, you know, help a lot of signing in a lot of these guys. And do you think he probably does the same thing this summer?
Yeah, I hope so. I think he did a great job. I mean, obviously, being a player GM is a little bit on the random side, but, like, he did a really good job, and no one can knock that. Mm-hmm. You bring in some really good talent. Like, guys who you wouldn't even think of, like Ashlew, he was deadly. He was such a good player this year. I mean, he was so smart bringing back Desley. He had a breakout season. He didn't start any games last year. And this year, he was the real deal. Ski played really, really good in the playoffs. And that was smart bringing him back. And a lot of the signings, like, he was really smart, like, bringing Russell Bird. I mean, obviously, everyone loved Maurice Jones Sr., but, like, you know, getting Bird back, I mean, everything worked out to us go to the finals. So clearly, you know, everything that he did last summer and, you know, leading up to the finals, it was worth it. Everything panned out properly. So I really look, especially if he's not playing, maybe he'll be even more active as a manager. That could bring, right?
Absolutely. That's a good point, too. And just lastly, what are your thoughts on head coach Steve Marcus? I mean, like, the way he came in and took over after Doug Plum walked away and, you know, and then they just kept the train rolling. They battled a lot of adversity and still made it to the finals. Just, like, what were your thoughts on that?
I thought it was pretty encourageable. And, like, you know what? Like, Steve Marcus seemed to be a really enthusiastic guy. I know he was with the program last year. I mean, even watching him, he's always, like, really active, really energized. He's really animated. But I think he, like, you know, he bleeds for this team. He really, it means a lot to him. I think he did a really good job. And I do hope to see him still with the Edge next year, whether it's head coach or assistant coach or some kind of major role. Like I think he's paid his dues and he deserves what he's got. And, like, he did a really good job. I mean, like Doug Plum left, it was before playoffs, so it was Marcus who got us to the finals. And I think that credit has to go to him. I mean, Plum did a great job, sure, but I mean, it was Steve Marcus that led us to the playoffs and led us to the finals for the first time, and that's huge, huge. I think he's owed a lot of credit. Did a great job, and I hope to see him again next year.
Yeah, absolutely, and a huge community guy, too.
Yeah, he really was.
Just always out in the community.
On Instagram, always, like, you know, out doing stuff, talking
schools
to fans,
and
like,
stuff.
You
it's
gotta
great.
Respect that. Yeah. Big time.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Sam, I do need to go to the break, so thank you so much for joining me on the program again tonight. You know, I always love having you.
No sweat, Ben. Anytime, man.
All right, pal. Have a good night.
All right. Goodbye.
All right, well, with that, it is time to swing it over to Mr. Richard Duggan over in the VOCM newsroom. And then when we come back, I'll be joined live here in studio by Ben Cleary and Jack McCarthy, two pals of mine, friends of the show, who have been on in the past. And we're going to dive into everything hockey. We'll touch on the NHL playoffs, of course. The Carolina Hurricanes now out. The Boston Bruins absolutely slapped them. And San Jose now on the brink of elimination with a big St. Louis win yesterday. There's also the World Championships happening. We're Canada just defeated Denmark earlier this evening with a big shutout win as they look to face off against the USA tomorrow. And then there's also the Memorial Cup happening in Halifax as well. So we're going to touch on just about everything, and we'll carry that for the whole next hour. And so, yeah, we'll switch it over to Mr. Richard Duggan in the VOCM newsroom, and then we'll be right back on the Monday Night Sports Show brought to you by Maverick Sports and Collectibles. Don't forget, they've got signed pictures, sports cards, memorabilia, t-shirts, hats, hoodies, and jackets, and everything you need to support your Newfoundland Growlers as we gear up for the Kelly Cup Finals. Yeah, Kelly Cup Finals. Again, just let that sink in. But we'll be right back right after this.
This is the Monday Night Sports Show on the VOCM Bigland Radio Network.
Welcome back to the Monday Night Sports Show, everybody, brought to you by Maverick Sports and Collectibles at 250 Water Street. But I am joined here now live in studio by two pals of mine, Jack McCarthy and Ben Cleary. Welcome back to the program, gentlemen.
Thanks for having us. It's exciting to be back.
Yeah, big weekend in the books. Jack, how you feeling?
Feeling great. Good. Made 2-4 in the books. Got to spend some quality time with the family and friends. Now we're ready to talk about some sports.
That's what it's all about.
Absolutely.
Nice little long weekend. Mm-hmm. And you went home to Gross Morne.
I did.
How was that?
It was lovely. My vacation was fantastic. I was lazy. Honestly, I'll come right out and say it. I was lazy. I spent a lot of time just docked at home, soaking it all in.
I saw you on the TV. I saw you on the TV getting some work in.
Yeah, Thursday night was a big night.
Yeah, still getting it in, doing the politics, covering the election. Good to see.
You know, it's just the sports hat's on tonight.
Absolutely.
But yeah, so we got a lot to talk about, and we have an hour to do it, thank God, because three of us in a room together, things can tend to get, you know, a little bit crazy. So thank God we have a good hour to really get some stuff under our belts, but we're going to start with the NHL playoffs, and we'll start first off with Boston slapping Carolina 4 games straight. Definitely thought Boston was going to win that series, no doubt. I think everyone did. But I personally did not expect them to get swept. Even when they won the first two, I still thought Carolina would find a way to win at home, but Boston just looked too friggin' good.
They did. They looked great. And the sweep drinks continues.
Yeah.
It started off with the Islanders swept the Penguins, and then the Islanders go and get swept by Carolina. And then you think Carolina's humming. I mean, people expected, like you said, the expectations were for Boston to win. Mm-hmm. The way they play playoff hockey is superior to a lot of teams.
It's unbelievable.
It is great, for sure. And, I mean, they look good going into the series, and they proved what they do in the playoffs all the way, 4 lines of hockey, 6, like, strong skating defensemen. Mm-hmm. And for them to get the sweep, I mean, you hope that for me personally as a Boston fan, I hope that stretch of sweeps getting alternated doesn't continue.
Yeah,
but I'm excited as a Bruins fan going into the finals. The boys look good. Their first line is absolutely humming. Pastrnak seems to be getting his legs. Whether he was hurt or not early or has just dealt with playing it now and getting used to it, he seems to be getting his legs back. Those kind of weird turnovers that he never really has that were showing up in the early rounds.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe he wasn't hurt. It could have been just early career playoff kind of stumbles, but he looked fantastic last round, for me at least.
I don't have much money in my bank account, but I would bet it all that Boston will not get swept in the Stanley Cup.
They are too good. They are too good to get swept.
The way their team is made, from goaltender out, Tuukka Rask is having a Conn Smythe worthy playoff season. And their defensemen are, like, they kind of have a mentality where if you're not 6'5" and 230 pounds, then you better score goals.
You know what I mean?
So you can either put pucks in the net or you can hit the body. And then up front, they have the best line in hockey right now with Bergeron, Marchand, Pastrnak. And then all the secondary production, Jake DeBrusque, Charlie Coyle, Marcus Johansson, David Krejci has been tearing it up. He's a guy you always kind of forget about in the regular season, but in the Stanley Cup playoffs, he kills it. Right now, the Boston Bruins are the favorite to win the Stanley Cup, I think. Especially coming out of, like, Carolina was a hot team. Their roster wasn't as deep, but they had good defensemen. And Boston just made them look like they were nothing.
Yeah, they just really just exposed them in every facet of the game. It was just, you know, they really did. They just beat them in every corner. They were first to the puck, and then, like, just from breakout to, you know, just dominating in the offensive zone and then just shutting it down defensively too. You know, they really did it all, and they just did it better than Carolina, plain and simple. And the experience factor heavily weighs in there as well. Boston is a team who knows how to get the job done. They've got phenomenal leadership. Like, you know, if it was realistically probably anybody else in the league, Patrice Bergeron would be wearing the C. But, like, it is Big Z, you know, and, like, personally, I don't even think it would be a terrible move to make the transition next year.
Yeah, I was going to say, Zdeno Chara has signed on for another year, but he's slowing down a little bit. There's
oh my
no
God,
doubt
yeah.
about that. Patrice Bergeron deserves the C, and he's 33 right now. He's 33. He deserves his time as the captain. Zdeno Chara has his. Might win a Stanley Cup as a C again.
Yes.
It's Bergeron's time.
It is Bergeron's time. We've talked about this off the show a bit. And no disrespect to Big Z. Because
no, God.
He's a Hall of Famer. But I think, I mean, it doesn't happen that often in the league in terms of removing the C from a guy. It's starting to trend like that more a bit in today's game. That you've seen a few C's. San Jose, for example, Pavelski getting the C, moved to Pavelski.
Yeah.
But I like the move. I think it's out of respect for kind of where the team is transitioning. And just in terms of just some reflection, when you're a guy like Zdeno and you've just been playing for as long as you had. And, I mean, what is he now, 43? Is he 42, 43?
I think 42.
We'll get that up really quick. 43. Turning 43.
Yeah.
So just, I mean, the NHL is a demanding league, which we all know, but just the amount of upkeep it takes just from a personal standpoint, no doubt the boys say he's still a great leader in the room.
Oh, 100%.
But in terms of how young the league's moving, so I think it's a combination of factors. The amount of effort he needs to put into his own self, not in a selfish way, but just in a way to make sure he's prepared to continue to play at a high enough level. And then hand-in-hand with the transition of how young the league is right now, it's hard to relate with 19-year-olds coming to the league when you're 42.
Yeah.
And a guy like Bergeron, who's just beloved by the locker room and the entire city, I think that'd be a good handing of the torch just to kind of balance out the room and just keep success going into the future. Because you never want to see a guy starting to kind of slip out and be worried about leading the team while also letting his own kind of focus on his own game. There's a balance that needs to be had, and it's harder when you get older, I think.
Absolutely, and you can kind of look at the LA Kings in that facet as well, because that's what happened with Dustin Brown. You know, they stripped him of the C. He wears an A still, and, you know, he has fallen off quite a bit in the last number of years. But, again, he's an older guy in the league now as well. But, you know, they made the transition to Kopitar, which obviously I think was a great move.
I do too.
Him or Doughty, but I think Kopitar is the leader of that team. But with Bergeron, it's like you're saying, like, obviously so much respect for Big Z. It's Big Z. And that's why, again, like, if Bergeron was on any other team in the league, you know, he would have been wearing the C for the last number of years.
Yeah.
But, you know, it is Big Z, and he speaks for himself. But, like, the transition of power, I think it would be, and because he can still lead, you know, like, all of next year. He'll still be the leader in the room and whatnot or whatever he does.
Yeah.
But, like, I think it's just a good move.
Sorry, what you said about Dustin Brown, too, and on top of making sure your own personal game is in the right spot. After they moved the C over to Kopitar, Brown's game has been on the decline, but he's had better seasons, higher production since they've removed that kind of... So from that standpoint, I mean, the C is a huge responsibility, especially in the NHL. It's taken with such a high amount of respect, but there are things that can take away possibly from someone's personal production on the ice with the pressures and responsibilities of wearing the C. So maybe you'd see a rejuvenated end of career season from Chara, as we have seen from a few years now with Dustin Brown without the C. Yeah. So you can, from that perspective,
when Dustin Brown lost the C, he had 36 points. The year before that, he had 28. Since having an A and not having the C, he's had 61 and 51 points.
There you go.
So the production has been up. And just kind of transitioning here to the Toronto Maple Leafs, it is dire for them. I don't care if it's John Tavares or Austin Matthews.
Oh, my God. Yes.
The Toronto Maple Leafs need to name a captain for that dressing room.
Yes, they do. They need that definitive leadership. Yes. And it's clearly there. It's there in the room, but, you know, they need it. And it does need to happen. It's just been too long now.
Yeah, a playoff contending team needs somebody with a C on their chest.
It just provides the appropriate pecking order. And there's just different roles. I mean, there's can be leaders throughout the room. You can be a leader in a locker room, as we know, whether you have an A or C or nothing. However, just to have that lack of pecking order, as I said, I feel like it makes things confusing on who to look to in certain moments. Sports like that, especially like you said, in the playoffs, if you're contending, it needs to be that one guy. It needs to be without a doubt. He's the one that's going to say that one thing to get the boys going, get the team going in a moment of like dire need, whether it's a game seven. You just need the one in particular person to look to. And when you have multiple A's and no C, I think that can make that kind of complicated.
Yeah.
Not me personally, not playing in NHL playoffs. That's just an outside opinion. But I mean, I agree, Claire, you'd like to see whether it doesn't seem that they're both appropriate players, both deserving. You just got to, and I don't think either of them would be offended the other way. It just makes the role, it cements the roles.
And I think you got to throw Morgan Rielly in that conversation as well.
Absolutely. Because
like they say that no one loves being a Toronto Maple Leaf more than Morgan Rielly.
Just
embraces it, just absolutely loves it. And, you know, he's just a defensive anchor for that team. He is their number one guy. That's very obvious.
Yeah.
Fans love him.
Yeah, and the fans love him. And, like, how could you not? And then he puts up those incredible numbers as well. And, I think he's got to also be in the running. for that C.
He has the pedigree too. Fifth overall draft pick. Like, been with them his whole career.
Yeah.
And Norris Trophy candidate.
Yes.
This season. Not in the top three, but he's in the top five, which is...
I think snubbed out of the top three. Wait,
I think he got absolutely snubbed. 100%.
And as you said, top five without a doubt. And I'd say even top four without a doubt. But yeah, no, there's definitely... They got some options for sure.
Yeah, and I really don't care who it is. I really don't.
No.
Just give someone the seat.
Somebody needs to be the leader.
Yes. Like,
you know, government would, if all the politicians came together and just talked it out, things would get done. But you still need the premier, you still need the prime minister to have that clear voice. And it's the same thing in a locker room. You just, somebody needs to say, okay, this is what we're doing, this is how we're going to do it. And if he says it right, the team moves forward. If he says it wrong, then name a new captain.
Yeah.
It's as simple as that.
Yeah. I mean, we have, just in sports, I've heard a saying that I particularly enjoy, and it's, good decision, bad decision, no decision. Your best case scenario is you have the right decision, but coming after that, at least you need to make a decision. I think the worst decision that can be made is no decision.
Yes.
It's just, well, I don't know. It doesn't,
very well said.
Provides confusion, cloud. I don't know. But, anyways.
Yeah, but just back to the Bruins on and what we were talking about there, because now, obviously, in sweeping Carolina, I also just think they did just a really good job. Like, they were driving Justin Williams nuts. And you could tell it was definitely getting him a little bit off his game. He wasn't staying more focused, you know, on the game itself. It was more of just nailing someone, going after someone, whatever the case may be. But definitely rattled him, and that didn't help Carolina either. Nope. But, you know, like they said, they did get absolutely smoked again there in Game 4. Rod Brind'Amour just came out and said, he was like, I'm sorry that we went out that way. Like, I apologize to the fans. That sucked. And I respect that, and I don't think that, you know, it was Justin Williams' fault he lost the series or anything. He was the main reason they pretty much are where they are. But I think the Bruins just, they just, like, they know how to get to you. They'll drive you absolutely crazy, and they can do it to, you know, the guys who you think that you would not be able to knock off their game, someone who's, you know, just such a vet and such a playoff guy like Justin Williams.
Yeah, and we've talked about Patrice Bergeron on and on, but Brad Marchand was a 100-point player this year. And, like, he rattles people to a point, like, I don't think it's easy to understand just how hated he is in the NHL. He's a villain through and through, with the media, with the fans, with other players. And he scored 100 points. Like,
just
like, get out of here.
Such a wide range of abilities. And his teammates, I've read things about him, that, like, his teammates come out and say, it seems like it's aimless. It feels as if, like, his, like, disturbance and how he's, like, kind of going at other guys and other teams seems kind of mindless, and he's just that style of player. But people have said he picks and targets certain players that he thinks are crucial, and he sets out a game plan on how he's, without letting it affect his production. Like you said, he's a 100-point scorer, so he's obviously figured out a great way to not let it affect that. But he gets inside of certain individuals' heads that are key cogs on other teams. As you said, Justin Williams.
And he takes up serious real estate in there.
Serious real estate. But to see Justin Williams get baited into taking three penalties in one period, and was that game six or game seven? I'm not too sure. But he took three penalties in one period, and it was just, it shocked me to see a guy who's Mr. Mr. Game 7, 19th season in the league, for him to just get off his rocker like that after
especially
having such a good first round.
One was an elbowing and one was holding. Penalties that, like, can be avoided easily.
Completely.
And offensive zone penalties.
Yeah, 200 feet away from the other team's net. Yeah.
Bizarre for a guy like that to get baited into just getting outside of his own game, just for them to be able to get in his head like that, such a poised and experienced guy. I guess testament to the way the Bruins are playing right now.
Yeah, seriously.
Yeah.
But another point now with the Bruins going forward is 11-day break.
Yeah.
They're going to get. In total, is that what it is?
Yeah.
It's an 11-day break. So that's the longest break a team has had going into the Cup Final. I think that there's two teams that were tied with nine days off, and that was Edmonton and Carolina. And they both went on to lose the Cup Finals. So do you think that much rest, you know, the 11-day break could hurt the Bruins at this point because they have been so red hot for so long?
It makes me nervous a little bit just because the momentum in playoff hockey. I mean, it doesn't surprise me that the two previous 9-day breaks have led, like you said, the other two teams that have had such a long layoff before the series starts have led to losses. I'd like to hope that just based on how the Bruins seem to know their identity so well, I think they can pick it up from where they left off better than most, just because it's not a new style they've learned. What the way they're playing is the way they've always, or in the recent history at least, have historically played great hockey. So they know what it takes. It's not like they found something out of the blue. Now they have a break. Maybe they may have it. Maybe they lost it. What they've been doing is what they've set out to do, not just from a winning standpoint, but how they're going to win. So I think they know what they've done well, and I'd like to believe that the rest will provide health and just a nice regroup, a little time to take take a week off, get the body right, and keep the minds. I think they'll keep the minds in check, and I think whoever wins game one, if they can show up game one and get a win and prove to everyone that that rest didn't matter in a negative way, then I think they'll be good. That will be good. But I'll talk to you after game one, and I might have a reassessment on that take.
Cleary, what are your thoughts?
It's tough to say. Historically, the West is heavier than the East. But the teams that Boston have played, like they played the Columbus Blue Jackets, and Columbus was arguably the heaviest hitting team in this conference. So they handled that well. And now, yes, they're coming into a long break. But like you said, Jack, they have a leadership group. Like Patrice Bergeron, Zdeno Chara, Brad Marchand, they've been through it before. Yeah. David Krejci. They know what they have to do. Like I said, my money is on the Boston Bruins. If I'm Don Sweeney, the GM, I'm just taking a nice little B&B, sending the team out. You know, they're vets.
Yep.
They're going to practice hard. Just relax. Spend time with the team. Bond. And then come back. You're going to play a San Jose or a St. Louis team that is banged up and has been through the rigors of playoff hockey. San Jose has played two Game 7s already. They've played a lot of hockey. They're banged up. Watching them the other night, Erik Karlsson, Joe Pavelski, Thomas Hertl, all off the bench. I think, you know, they might come out slow in game one, but this break is going to do them a lot of good.
And, Claire, I'll just hop in there. I don't think hunger is going to be an issue at all. Not like it typically ever is in the NHL playoffs. But from the Bruins standpoint, they've been relevant for years now, but they haven't won since 2011. They lost the Cup Finals since then, and they're looking at other franchises such as Pittsburgh, L.A., Chicago.
Yeah.
I mean, just the obvious ones that have been dynasties, and they've got the making to kind of be in that same type of talk, but they're just on the outskirts right now.
Yeah.
And I think the conversation is there, not to look too far forward, is that they do have something special, they've had something special, but they want to break through that kind of one-time Stanley Cup champion. If they can, that just leads to the legacy, pedigree. Everyone's got motivations in terms of winning, but I mean, when you've just been on the, just barely on the outside of this kind of elite group of franchises looking in, I think one more Stanley Cup win, if they can beat a team like Columbus or San Jose, also elite teams for the last number of years without winning, I don't think they want to let teams like San Jose or St. Louis get into their one Stanley Cup club. I think they are really, really motivated to kind of elevate the legacy of the Bruins as a whole and their legacies as individual players and that leadership group as multi-Stanley Cup champs.
There's also a different legacy happening here as well, and that's just the city of Boston's legacy.
Oh, my God. It's unbelievable. And, Jack, you can touch on this really well as a Pats fan. You're just a Boston fan.
I am. I wouldn't be the first to bring it up. I bring it up to my friends a lot lately, and and it doesn't always go over the best because people, they like to hate on Boston, which is fair because they don't provide parity to sports.
No. Oh, man.
I mean, the Trons Patriots won the World Series. I mean, geez, sorry. The Patriots won the Super Bowl this year. The Red Sox are coming off a World Series championship. The Celtics just got bounced from the playoffs, looked great up until they lost against Milwaukee. And now the Bruins are going to the finals. So to have three out of four major sports teams make the finals within a calendar year, or within the last 12 months, should I say, I mean, that's a city feat that the likes of which I haven't seen in my lifetime.
Crazy. It's
since,
crazy.
Since the turn of the century, they've won 12 championships.
They have lots of parades. Yeah, I love to see it.
Oh, man.
It's a lot of parades.
And it's all in, like, the last how many years? Like, they've just, it's been, like, the bulk of those 12.
I love seeing the pictures of the 12-year-olds or, like, 11-year-olds at parades, and they've got the biggest smiles, and they have their signs saying, this is how many parades I've been to. And it's like 11 or 12 now.
That's sickening.
And they're just there, like, the biggest smiles. They don't know anything besides winning in that city.
I know, man. It's nuts.
And I think that comes down to a whole number of things. We've talked about that before, Murph, just the salary cap and how the Bruins kind of nuance that. It's just everyone that seems to play out of that city, all four sports, just buys into winning.
Absolutely. And they just love playing for the city. They love playing for the fans. Like, it's just that mindset there, and they have such diehard fans too. Oh my God!
I'm looking at the city's moniker right now, and Boston is known as the City of Champions, my personal favorite, Title Town.
Welcome to Title Town.
Welcome to Title Town.
But another just quick point on the Bruins before we go to the break. a big difference this year with this team too, and because Bruins fans, Bruins media, they're always pretty quick to point the finger to Tuukka Rask. The guy gets, you know, he gets a pretty hard time. He gets picked apart quite a bit. But, and it's always been like, you know, Rask can't get it done.
Always compared to Thomas.
Yeah, right. And that's because Tim Thomas stepped in when he was like, what, 38 or some 40, whatever it was. I can't remember now right offhand. But he was, you know, in the later stages of his career, no doubt. And just had like a couple of the just years of his life, like playing just out of this world hockey. And
also
yeah,
playing
got
a different brand of hockey. He played completely like 10 different. Feet out of the crease.
Yeah, he was more like a Dominic Hasek style. He was like one of the last surviving of that style goaltender, you know, who was like, who very well might just, if that puck's coming towards him, who might just take off at any moment.
Yeah.
You know, he was just that kind of gamble, unorthodox, but made just ridiculous saves.
While being an American with, like, just a big smile and a bit of a dad bod and undersized, I mean, he just embodied that blue-collar style that U.S. loves, but Boston sports just loves.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So they just
love.
They brought him in arms open and just loved every bit of the way he played.
One thing about Tim Thomas I've never understood, and there's nowhere to find the backstory on this, but when they won the Cup that year, and they were invited to the White House.
Yeah.
Tim Thomas said, I do not agree with Barack Obama.
Yeah, he didn't go.
Yeah, and he didn't go.
Yeah,
and I've always wondered what it was about, like, Barack Obama's policies. He said it was a policy issue, but he never went to the White House.
Yeah, so. I think it was just purely, like, political belief, and he was just really passionate about it. So, I said, you know, whatever. And then now you're seeing a lot more of that. But anyways, we won't even get into that.
No.
But now Tuukka's playing out of his mind. You know, he's playing the best hockey of his career, the best playoff hockey, no doubt, he's ever played. And that alone, and that's when you have that confidence in your goaltender, you know, when you know you can go because he has you and he's there. Like, that makes such a big difference, too, for both forwards, defensemen, the whole team, from the whole way down. It makes a huge difference. But we'll go take a quick timeout, and then we'll continue this conversation. We'll be right back right after this.
Call now 273-5211 or 1-888-590-8626. That's 1-888-590-VOCM. The Monday Night Sports Show will be right back. This is the Monday Night Sports Show on the VOCM Big Land Radio Network.
The Monday Night Sports Show is brought to you by Maverick Sports and Collectibles, 250 Water Street. Everything for the sports fan.
Welcome back to the Monday Night Sports Show, brought to you by Maverick Sports and Collectibles at 250 Water Street. I'm joined here live in studio with Ben Cleary and Jack McCarthy. We just spent 20 minutes pretty much pumping the Bruins, so we'll switch it up a little bit now. We'll go over to the Western Conference, where the St. Louis Blues are now up 3-2 on the San Jose Sharks, and the Sharks are facing elimination yet again in these playoffs. Down 3-2, they were in the first round, and here we are. So, dominant win by St. Louis yesterday. They just absolutely ran over San Jose from start to finish. And as we were just mentioning a little bit earlier, San Jose was limbed by the end of it. But what were your thoughts on the game?
I mean, St. Louis just has their foot on the pedal right now. They look like a wagon. Jaden Schwartz picking up, I think I saw the stat earlier, his second hat-trick of the playoffs. I think he's the first player to get two hat-tricks in the playoffs since 2009?
Something like that.
Yeah, I think it was someone crazy. In Detroit. And fantastic. They look great. San Jose beat up, depleted. I mean, they went in the third period. You like to think it was because they were getting knocked around a little bit, but to see Carlson out for the entire third, Hurdle out, Pavelski out, that's three of their biggest players on the entire team and top players in the entire league that have been a massive contributing factor to where they've made in the playoffs. So I think, I mean, even if one of them are out for this foreseeable future for the rest of the series, then that's a huge issue. If two of them out, I mean, I think it might be over for them just based on the Bruins are playing, mixed with those injuries. But Cleary, what do you think?
Well, they're going back to St. Louis. St. Louis is a tough barn to play in anyhow. And I think right now, in my mind, I still consider St. Louis the underdog. In all reality, when they made those offseason trades, when they signed Tyler Bozak, they traded for Ryan O'Reilly, they brought in Patty Maroon, it was like, okay, St. Louis is a wagon. And then they started off, they were worst team in the league. The worst team in the league on January 1st.
Like, not the division.
Not the division, the league. They were going to have the best odds in the draft lottery. And now we're looking at a team that has turned it around. And in the playoffs, they've been nothing short of what you would have expected them to be at the start of the season.
Yeah.
So in my mind, I keep thinking, wow, St. Louis is the, but they're not. They're a fantastic hockey team. They're heavy. They hit hard. And San Jose has a few things riding against it. Number one is that Erik Karlsson is not Norris Trophy best defenseman in the NHL, Erik Karlsson, that we've seen before. He's skating on half an ankle and battling a groin injury right now.
Yeah.
We're not like the first goal St. Louis scored last night, Erik Karlsson just passed it to a St. Louis player. So, you know, San Jose's best players, like Logan Couture has been amazing. Brent Burns
phenomenal.
Is fantastic. But San Jose is because of injuries, they have some depth issues, and St. Louis is just riding this train. Did you guys see Vladimir Tarasenko's shootout goal last
night?
That's
what I was going to bring up next. Oh, my God.
Oh, my God.
Disgusting.
Yeah.
You knew he was going to come in and just absolutely rip, but just like the way he cuts in and then fires back to the other side, you're just like, oh, my good God. You don't even see it come off the stick. It's wild.
Yeah. He's embodied kind of the path that you just laid out that the Blues have had too. Kind of quite, like you have these huge expectations for such a caliber player going into a season. And just, I mean, I guess market that we don't get our eyes on the East Coast of Canada, we don't get our eyes on the Blues that much throughout the season, especially when they were struggling so much. And just of all the guys that are at the scoring pace that the league is happening this year, a guy like Tarasenko's name just kind of slipped through the cracks a bit. And now you get this playoff hockey and we're seeing how their entire team is playing as a whole. And you have to think that, I mean, him as a focal point, when he succeeds, they seem to succeed right alongside with him. And the things he's doing on the ice in the past couple series is just gross. He's such a good, his shot is outlandish.
Yeah, it's right up there with the best ones in the league. You know, he's the kind of guy, he's one of the few guys who can walk in and just beat a goalie from the top of the circle with no screen.
With that lethal wrister too, he doesn't have to lean into it too much. It just, it's in and out of the hands so quick.
And then when he does get the time and does lean into one, it's just an absolute bullet
bomb.
So like,
it's so well placed.
Yeah, you know, it's one of those, you know, like top five, he's right there with those guys who can just absolutely rip the puck from anywhere. Tarasenko's right in that conversation, and he was for a long time. You know, it was only really this year, again, when the Blues struggled as much as they did, that his name did kind of slip through the cracks, like you said, Jack.
He scored from 2014 to 2016, he had 37, 40 goals, and 39 goals.
Yeah, there you go.
The past 2 years, he's had 33. So he's kind of dipped down a little bit to being that kind of 30-goal scorer, both with 80 games played, but he's still just a sniper through and through.
Absolutely. And I mean, you never want to see overall regular season production drop, but the Blues have had the kind of that second round wall that they've reached in playoffs in the past. Yeah. So, I mean, if his production has to drop off a little bit within regular seasons, I mean, if that's a contributing factor to him staying fresh, healthy, whatever it is, to be able to play at the highest level possible at this point of the year, then I'm okay with it. If they can continue in years to come to make these kind of runs into the Western Conference Finals, as they're looking now, potentially the Stanley Cup Finals, and that means him not doing as much in the regular season, but his numbers in the playoffs have been great, and his game is, like I said a second ago, obviously a direct correlation with their team's success. So it's nice to see him playing as well as he is.
Yeah, and as you mentioned just a little bit earlier when we were talking about how, you know, San Jose has no doubt had a couple of lucky breaks in this playoffs. There's no ignoring that. You know, when you can go back to the first round in that game side event against Vegas, you know, when that hit ended up being, you know, a 5-minute major that they scored 4 goals on the power play. And yeah, I mean, that was incredible. They still went out there and scored 4 goals on a 5-minute major. That is wild, and they're completely deserving of that because that was incredible. But, like, you know, they should have never even had a power play there. That wasn't a penalty.
No.
Much less a 5-minute major. That wasn't even a penalty. That play happens 100 times a game. So, like, almost on every single faceoff.
Yeah.
It was just really unlucky the way it went down. So they caught the break there, and then you can look to, you know, the hand pass just earlier in this series. Like, that was just no doubt a hand pass. And it was Timo Meier, right?
Timo Meier,
and he even got an assist on it. Like, come on, are you kidding me?
No.
Playoffs in overtime, and he literally just throws him the puck and gets a markdown assist for it. I was like, get out of here. If that's not a bigger even slap in the face, I don't know what is, but, like, you know, San Jose has, again, I'm not trying to crap on San Jose. They're still, like, a great team and are deserving of where they are because, again, like, they've found a way to pull it off. But, like, that was wild. And how these just aren't reviewable is just, like, how is that not reviewable? And the 5-minute major is not being reviewable? Like, are you kidding me? When they can go backtrack for 7 or 8 minutes or whatever long it is and find when someone went offside?
By a millimeter?
Yeah, and you're just like, what? But you can't even look at this play, or it just, it doesn't make any sense to me. I can't wrap my head around it. But you were saying how I kind of got a little bit off track there, sorry. But we were saying how, you know, that luck kind of seems like it might have run out a little bit.
It feels like the well might be emptying a little bit in terms of the lucky bounces that San Jose maybe has gotten to get to this point. And, I mean, luck might not even be necessarily the only contributing factor. I was watching Tim and Sid earlier, and they were saying since that hand pass, the penalty count has been power plays for the Blues have been 12 and power plays for the Sharks have been 5. So I guess the NHL in kind of a more subtle and discreet way is, I mean, penalties are penalties, but they were breaking down a few of them, and the way the calls are going, based on how the game flow is going, it seems as if the edge maybe should only lead slightly to the Blues. However, the calls are kind of going in a little bit more of a drastic favor to the Blues. So maybe the NHL in a subtle way said, look, we need to kind of balance out, balance the scales. And if the San Jose continues to win under those circumstances, then props to him again. But so possibly maybe the league is putting San Jose against the wall a little bit too, saying we've given you a couple lucky breaks. Now it's time to see what you can do with kind of the tides tilted the other way. So who knows? But
It's important to mention as well another massive factor, because St. Louis has always been a depthy team. They've always been good, but they've always had Jake Allen or Brian Elliott in net. And Jordan Binnington has come out of nowhere. I saw a stat that every time St. Louis Blues lose, Binnington lets in no more than 2 goals the next game.
Yeah, and like sorry, continue.
Yeah, no, that's it. It's just they have goaltending that is solid, that they truly believe in.
Yeah.
And that means so much.
Absolutely. Same thing. It's like goes right back to the point of Tuukka Rask. And even I think it was in the first round against Winnipeg, that was the first time he'd given up more than 4 goals in a game since he entered the league. Like, come on.
And then the reporter comes and says, are you nervous? And just stares them down with, like, the harshest death glare eyes ever and says, do I look nervous? Yeah.
And you're just like, oh, man, like that
guy. And
then
just goes and backs it up.
Yeah, exactly, right? He's just has all this confidence. He's cocky. I love it. But, yeah, it's played a huge role. And all credit to San Jose as well. Don't get me wrong. I mean, they're a great hockey team. They have some of the best defensemen in the world, some of the best forwards in the world. And, you know, they are deserving of where they are. They're a great team. And I would love to see this jumbo, this kind of last, you know, jumbo ride continue. But I think, depending on the lineup, because like you said, there's a couple of key names that if are in the lineup for Game 6 make a big difference. But St. Louis at home, it's going to be tough.
It is going to be tough. But I think I personally believe that the next 2 games of the series, potentially 1 game, does hang in the balance of what San Jose's roster is looking like.
Absolutely.
Because they were getting smacked around a little, like not a little bit, a little bit would be an understatement. 5-0 game last night, I mean, as we saw. So it could be a very much precautionary reasons that they want maybe Pavelski's obviously been banged up, took the headshot before, came back, has been great since he came back, took another shot to the head, hurdle with a shot to the head, and Carlson's been put through the ringer with the minutes. So 3 massive guys. But for them to be sat in the third, like we said, is obviously a very wary. But it could be precautionary reasons. If we see all 3 of those guys back in for Game 6, you know that no matter how hurt they are, they're going to put everything they have in the
Absolutely.
Line.
Absolutely.
And if they have their full lineup, then it's not against the realm of possibility whatsoever that they win on the road and come back
home.
Yeah,
and 4-7.
And then if they 4-7, then you have to be looking to San Jose as the favorite again to win. So it could go either way, but they are in a bad spot, especially if those guys are on the shelf.
The lose-lose situation is that whoever wins has to play Boston.
And it's true.
Yeah. The Eastern Conference is heads in. It used to be, you know, the Chicago, L.A., they dominated the league, but now we're looking at Tampa Bay, even though they were upset this year. Tampa, Boston, Toronto. The East is Pittsburgh. The East is the big team right now, is the big conference.
The parity is shifting.
It is.
The dominance that has been the West is shifting more towards the East for sure. And like you said earlier in the show, I think the West had that kind of recipe to success was that the size that they've been.
Yeah, they were huge. They
were massive and just they played playoff hockey all year. Yeah. It felt like against each other. And then when they get to the playoffs, you would almost expect them to beat each other up by the time they'd make it to the finals against the East. But that's not how it worked. It was just the strongest gladiators like came in at the end and just they're so good, so hard for the teams in the East to beat them. But now the East has kind of adopted some of the things that led to the West's success while also implementing kind of new systems and sticking to some of the historic ways that the East-style teams have played. And I think the combination of those facets, the East is definitely the teams to beat right now in my mind as well.
Yeah. Well, actually, we'll take a quick timeout, and then again, we're going to continue this conversation. But we'll actually switch over a little bit after and hit the World Championships in Slovakia, Canada, with a big win today, and they face the U.S. tomorrow, which is going to be an absolute tilt. So we'll be right back on the Monday Night Sports Show right after this.
Call now 273-5211 or 1-888-590-8626. That's 1-888-590-VOCM. The Monday Night Sports Show will be right back. This is the Monday Night Sports Show on the VOCM Big Land Radio Network.
Welcome back to the Monday Night Sports Show, everybody. I'm your host, Ben Murphy, and I'm joined here with Ben Cleary and Jack McCarthy. We took 40 minutes to cover the first two, to cover the two conference finals, but that's no surprise with us. But just a little bit perspective right now. Let's look at Boston versus St. Louis in a final. What are your predictions there? Let's say just like a game and a winner.
Boston versus St. Louis?
There
you go. Now the mic's on. Boston versus St. Louis is a tighter series in my mind than Boston San Jose would be.
Why so?
Because San Jose, like we said prior to the break, San Jose is battling injuries. The depth isn't there, and they're just not as crash and bang to wear down the Bruins who have an 11-day break.
And the Bruins will hit them hard, as you know they do.
St. Louis is going to come hot and heavy like they do in every series. They're a heavy team. Like their average defenseman size is like 6'3". They hit hard and they hit
often. Even got guys, you know, like Patty Maroon, and then even Barbashev, man, he throws his weight around too. Like,
yeah.
They have a lot of those guys.
Barbashev took out Hurdle last night.
Yeah.
With a bit of a blindside hit. Wasn't penalized on it, but whatever. It's hockey. So I think no matter what, Boston just has a blend of skill, speed, and kind of durability and hard hitting aggressiveness that we don't really see in the Western Conference right now. So I think whoever takes on Boston, they're going to make a push for it, and if they win, it'd have to go to seven.
Yeah, okay. I like that.
Personally, I don't have a preference as a Bruins fan in terms of hoping they win. Mm-hmm. In terms of likeliness, if they'd beat either or, whether it be the Blues or the Sharks, I think if we're looking at the Blues-Bruins matchup, I have to agree with your take, Clear. I think it'd be a much harder hitting series. And that goes through, like you just listed a couple of the fourth liners that the Blues have that crash bodies and bang, like Maroon. And that goes right up through the depth of their, skill guys, like Ryan O'Reilly's a beast. That guy's
huge.
Exactly. So it brings
take
more mass.
But he's huge.
You know, he is huge. And, I mean, his drive to the net is effective as almost anyone in the league, the way he edges body. But, I mean, I just think that series, the way the Blues have in the back end, Pietrangelo has reestablished himself as like a top end defenseman, which we haven't even said his name yet on the show.
Yeah, I know. Seriously.
So much depth.
The captain.
But, I mean, I think that'll be more of a matchup of goalies and hard hitting, your more classic playoff hockey. Bimington versus Rask would be an awesome matchup.
Tilt.
I mean, rookie versus vet. And both playing just out of their minds. Mm-hmm. So I think scoring would be lower in that series, just as a testimony. And so I think Boston would adapt that way to the Blues, just it wouldn't be as skilled, maybe not quite as fast-paced. Not that it wouldn't still be flying hockey, but the bodies will be flying. And I like the Bruins in that series, but it would be intense.
It's hard. It really is, honestly. And I hate saying it, too. But it really is hard to see the Bruins, like, not winning. Honestly, you know, both teams, whether it's St. Louis or San Jose, they are both wagons either way. But, like, it's just the Bruins have been so good consistently all postseason. And, again, like we've said so many times, that they just buy in. And I just think that, you know, this is their year and they kind of know it. And it's just like everything's going right. They're peaking at the perfect time like that. Everything. It's that type of thing. But I think it's going to be St. Louis. Now, I'm, you know, probably will sit here now next Monday just because I said that, and it'll be totally wrong. Like much of the takes I've had so far this playoffs, my God.
Not just you.
Yeah, no, at least I'm not alone in that one. But yeah, so I do think it will be St. Louis, but I am with you there, Cleary. I think it's going to go seven, and I really hope it does. I want to see double OT game seven. Like, oh, that's what I'm looking for all the time.
That's what you always want. And back to St. Louis, too, like their top line center, Ryan O'Reilly, he looks in the mirror and he wants to be Patrice Bergeron. Like, there's just nobody matches up to the forward group that the Boston Bruins have right now. And my money's on Boston.
Yeah. What do you think? Maybe take a quick time out before we come back, and then we'll hit the World Championship home before we wrap things up. Yeah, we'll take a quick timeout, and then we'll be right back right after this.
Call now, 273-5211, or 1-888-590-8626. That's 1-888-590-VOCM. The Monday Night Sports Show will be right back. This is the Monday Night Sports Show on the VOCM Bigland Radio Network.
The Monday Night Sports Show is brought to you by Maverick Sports and Collectibles, 250 Water Street. Everything for the sports fan.
Welcome back, everybody. We have 9 minutes left in the program, so we got to try to fit a whole lot of World Championships chit-chat in. Canada smacked Denmark today, 5-0. I watched the game. They look absolutely fantastic. Canada looked so good. They were just in cruise control of that game, start to finish, and they walked all over Denmark. But it was chippy. It was pleasantly chippy. It was really fun to watch. Denmark was, you know, they were rough. They were a little bit, like, you know, dirty. Not, like, you know, really dirty, but shots after whistle, that kind of stuff, too. They were giving it to Canada. I loved it. I thought it was great. But Canada plays their, no doubt, biggest game of the tournament tomorrow. That's the last game of the prelims, and that's against the States, who are loaded, completely loaded up. And they also have Jack Hughes playing as well, which I think is wicked.
Yeah, Patrick Kane came out.
Yeah,
and said,
and that's where I was
earlier
going.
Today,
take it away.
People always say, Jack Hughes plays like me. Well, he doesn't. He plays better than I do.
Yeah, he does a lot of things better than me.
Now, that's Patrick Kane being nice. Patrick Kane had like 140 points his OHL year with the London Knights. He was drafted first overall. He's won 3 Stanley Cups, a Conn Smythe Trophy, and MVP.
List goes on.
The list goes on.
He doesn't wear a letter.
But Team USA is... yeah. Just quick on Patrick Kane. When Murph said he doesn't wear a letter, rumors are out there that Patrick Kane refuses not to text in the dressing room. He drinks Pepsi like Alex Ovechkin on the bench. The guy is just an absolute mutant.
Gets into scuffles in the off season in terms of the media and taxi cab drivers.
Oh man,
he's had some ups and downs away from
the ice. Doubt. But my God, he's good.
Just amazing. Oh. You'll take him on your team every day, twice on Sunday.
Twice on Sunday.
But yeah, that game's going to be an absolute tilt tomorrow, and I'm looking forward to it. But the World Championships, all in all, just such a great tournament, and it really helps with this, like, you know, when you get deeper into playoffs. We were talking about that, too. You know, there's no games on tonight, and you're just like, oh, this sucks. Like, you know, there's no hockey on. You're like, what? This is terrible. And it does help out because, you know, there's games on, like, all throughout the afternoons. Like, that Canada game was on at, like, 5:30 today. It was awesome. But William Nylander has just popped off. Can we go there for a second? You get the stats up?
Yeah. So, William Nylander, in 4 games played, has 11 assists and 4 goals.
And, I mean,
in
you do have to take...
games played, so...
Okay, but...
15
you,
points.
You do need to take into credit for a second that, you know, there are, like, France, Austria... Italy,
yeah,
those kind of teams,
especially with the expanded format.
Yes, exactly.
More teams, more lower tier teams.
Britain lost today, and their post game chant was "We suck and we know it."
No, they came back and they won in overtime.
They won an OT today.
Yeah, they were down 3-0 and scored 4 unanswered to avoid regulation. Still chanted "We suck,"
we suck,
jokingly, but did not get relegated. Came back against France, and I was listening to someone's take on TSN today, and they said it was interesting because they personally, even though I'm a huge fan of the expanded bracket, just get more countries involved at that high level. But this individual was saying that they weren't as much of a fan, provided some lower quality hockey and some lower quality games, but said that they'd take this take back and were proven wrong today by this relegation game. I had caught a few minutes of it. And in terms of the quality of hockey, there was some really, really exciting things happening. And to see a 4-goal comeback, OT game, kind of that chippy nature, like you were saying with the Canada game, which you don't always get in the double IHF hockey. It can get a little bit passive from an aggressive standpoint. And two lower tier countries showing that hockey is obviously developing across the globe from not as much of a common kind of country
Absolutely.
Standpoint. But no, it was a great game. It was a lot of excitement and exciting finish.
Yeah, and I think the expansion is great for, you know, as they're trying to grow the game more and more. But that's also like Italy beat Austria in shootout. In the same thing, in the relegation game. So, like, which was also, and the way Italy celebrated after, they might as well have won the tournament.
Minnesota won the Stanley Cup.
Because they're just like, yeah, like they're back here. Now they're like, we're back here next year. And they're like, oh, this means so much, like in the post-game interviews and stuff. And it was great just to see the passion and how like just unbelievably thrilled they were just to get a win. And they were after losing like 11-0, 8-1, like just all these outrageous scores. And then they pull that off today, winning the shootout. And it was just like, it was just an incredible moment. And you could tell it was just like clearly the biggest moment in all of their hockey careers. And I think that's super cool for countries, again, like Italy and Austria. It's unreal.
I couldn't agree more. But also, just in terms of them, from their individual hockey careers, it's their biggest moment. But in terms of what they're playing for, I mean, you see guys playing for Team Canada, and no doubt they're representing the country and everything that hockey means to us in our country. It's huge. They're playing for more than them, more than the country. But what they're not playing for is like security from a country standpoint. There's no worries that Canada is not going to be relevant in any national championship from like 6 years old, if it was even a thing, all the way up to men's hockey. But these countries, when they win and they don't get relegated, it's a crucial for funding, excitement, the overall growth of the sport, Olympic runs, that type of thing, et cetera. Just so if it's a growing sport in their country, they're not just excited for them and what they've done personally as athletes, but just what they can provide for their country in terms of an expanding sport and just to not get relegated and to be able to kind of come back and have repeat performance, hopefully build and get some more wins, kind of close those margins of losses against higher order teams. I think that's an exciting thing for them too, and exciting for just the development of hockey across the world, which is what we're interested in.
And on that topic, on the development of hockey, I really do think the NHL is doing an absolute disservice to the world and all hockey fans out there, because they're not allowing their players to play in the Olympics. The World Cup of Hockey has been postponed again because the NHLPA is saying, you know, if we can't play in the Olympics, why are we doing this World Cup?
Yeah, absolutely.
And you know what? We're missing key cog years. Like this IIHF World Hockey Championship is just a glimpse of the teams that we'd be seeing.
Yes, exactly.
Jack Eichel playing with Johnny Gaudreau and Patrick Kane and Alex DeBrincat. You know, like we're seeing superstars from different nations come together for the first time that we should be seeing guaranteed at least every 4 years at the Olympics. And let's not even get into the fact that as a Canadian fan, like Connor McDavid would be a better hockey player because he's only 22.
Yeah.
Connor McDavid would be a better hockey player if he went into a dressing room and saw how Sidney Crosby and Patrice Bergeron go about their business day to day and win an Olympic gold.
Yeah.
It's bad for the hockey players themselves who don't get to represent their countries, and it's bad for us as fans. So.
And the World Cup of Hockey was awesome. The World Cup was unreal.
Yeah,
so they brought that back. It was absolutely unreal. And like, if we like, imagine having both of those, and then you throw in, you know, at the World Cup that is under 22 team. Is that how it works?
Under 23.
Under 23.
Yeah, they were so exciting.
Oh
in the last
my
World
God.
Championships when they beat Russia and it was
and Sweden too.
They bet Sweden when Nathan MacKinnon toe dragged.
That was
him
Sweden, sorry, not Russia.
Yeah,
Lundqvist. That goal by Nathan MacKinnon was phenomenal.
And looking back at that team, it really was the young stars. I mean, we were watching Austin Matthews, who hadn't played an NHL game.
Yep.
He made that team out of Switzerland.
Yeah.
Being drafted first overall. Mark Scheifele was on the team. Connor McDavid, Jack Eichel,
MacKinnon.
Like, just a whole group of players that really are the future of the NHL. That was a brilliant move.
And all those top guys that would kind of go on and continue in the last number of years, not to say that they wouldn't be exceptional top league caliber players without kind of exposure and that kind of experience, but just to get the bright lights on them early, not necessarily pressure, but just top games against top competition. All those guys have now emerged since that tournament. Like I said, not that they wouldn't have without this tournament, but you can't argue that it doesn't contribute to just the growth and the learning. Like you said, new guys, new room. I mean, just that high-level hockey, playing against the likes of Crosby. I mean, MacKinnon being under 23, coming in a pressure situation against Lundqvist, a guy that's been there for years, scoring on it. Just provides that confidence going into the next NHL season and that type of growth from those types of games that just makes hockey better as a whole, and that's what we want as fans.
Yeah, and again, like as fans, this is what we want. Like, this is unbelievable.
Give the people what they want.
But a quick note just back to the World Championships for a second, just because we chatted about it earlier, and it's just, I love this guy. I can't talk about him enough, but that Elias Pettersson ripped today against Latvia. He picked it up, and he just literally just looked at the net and just charged up and just absolutely fired it past the goal. You couldn't even see it go. And then he turns around and just gives the Latvian bench the death stare. The signature Elias Pettersson death stare that I just love.
A little behind the net sauce from Landeskog. Oh, man. And it appeared as if that top right corner could have been open on a quick release. And we all know Elias Pettersson's quick release is out of this
just
world.
Absolutely.
But he just decided to manipulate the goaltender's angle by holding it, assessing the situation, and letting that defenseman drag over to create the natural screen. And then to rip it top right the way he did. Just the composure to do that. That age, the skill he has, and then just whips around immediately out of hesitation. It's like he knew it was in, stares at the laughing bench, being like, this is my tournament.
Yeah, it's like, he must have got chirped by someone at some point or something like that for him to have to do that. But it was just absolutely gold.
Elias Pettersson, I have not seen a player just kind of inject a franchise with hope, especially one that's not drafted first overall and is touted 100%. As a generational player. But the Vancouver Canucks now have somebody that they are so excited about. I'm excited about it. I can't wait to watch the Vancouver Canucks now. And historically, I can't stand him.
he's the real deal. I absolutely I love it. Yeah. And he's a stud. And I can't wait to see him again next year because he's going to be even better. But, that's it. We're out of time. Shocking how fast an hour goes.
Blinking
is
gone.
When you get to talk about sports, it's unbelievable. But Ben Cleary, Jack McCarthy, thank you both for joining me here in studio tonight. You know, I love having you guys here and love talking sports with you because, you know, as like you said, an hour gone just like that. So, guys, thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having us. It was a pleasure.
Yeah, thanks for having us on the show, Ben. Always a pleasure. And let's talk next week when that Stanley Cup Finals is set in stone.
When we get underway. So, some exciting, exciting times ahead. Thank you to all the callers and guests on the program tonight as well. I can't thank you enough. On behalf of producer Mr. Zach Snow, I'm your host, Ben Murphy. Thank you so much for tuning into the program tonight, and we'll catch you next week at the very same time to do it all again. Have a good week.